So, hey, how do you keep, this is really a great one, how do you keep Canadian bacon from curling in your pan? Take away the brooms. Curling. Curling. I know. Would you like another one just to kind of bank up for that one? I had a really good one here. Oh, I know, I know. Yesterday, I spotted an albino Dalmatian, but it's the least I could do for it. I spotted an albino. Okay, we'll stop there. We'll stop there. We'll continue with our wonderful series on Love Is. And if you're watching online, thank you so much for watching. We're super pumped you're with us. And a totally good way to connect with God. Online, here in the room, it's really, really great. And if you didn't get the notes, they're outside the door there. You could pop out and grab a couple. Mike might be passing them out to you. But they're yellow sheets. And we're continuing the series on Love Is. And we started the series looking at John, in the book of John, John 21, and we saw Peter positioning himself in front of Jesus after he had denied him, after he had fallen asleep on him in Gethsemane, and Peter jumps in the water, throws himself in the water, and swims to Jesus on the Sea of Galilee. And that was really powerful because it's like being present, making yourself available face-to-face with genuine love. And then we continue the series with the bread of life. Jesus says, I am. And when Jesus says, I am, we know that God is love. So love says, love is. So love is bread of life. And a few weeks ago, we started a little bit of a miniature series, Love Is. And Jesus, the second thing he says is, I am the light of the world. And so in John chapter 8, I really have found this very interesting, and it's been kind of resonating in my heart for several weeks now. And the very first thing I saw was that Jesus says, I'm the light of the world, two times. And he says it in two different occasions. They're close to each other. The first one we talked about was a couple weeks ago, was in John chapter 8. And if you remember, this is the woman who's caught in adultery. And the scenario, the setting was, Jesus is in the temple early in the morning teaching, doing his Jesus thing. And the religious leaders catch this woman in the act of adultery. They say it, in the act of adultery. And they throw her in front of Jesus. Why they didn't bring the guy, still up for dispute. But they throw her in front of Jesus and they say, here's a woman caught in the act of adultery. Moses says we should stone her. What do you say? And Jesus, I'm just kind of rehearsing this for you, spark notes if you're young, cliff notes if you're old. He gets down in the sand, and he starts to move his finger, draw or write, I don't know, but he's got his finger in the sand, and you see this pause. And you got to know, for this lady who should be, like, killed for her indiscretion, including the guy, but that's just another issue, he pauses, Jesus pauses. And he takes time. And with the time, he writes in the sand, then he stands up. We don't know what he wrote. If it was important, we would know. I'm just saying. The important piece, in my opinion, is that he took time. And by taking time, he diffused the intensity, the volatility of that situation. He stands up and he says, whoever is without sin, you cast the first stone. And then he goes back and writes in the sand again, draws in the sand. And it says one by one, the religious leaders left, starting with the oldest down to the youngest. Maybe with the oldest because they had the most sin, and the youngest hadn't sinned enough yet to be totally dismissing themselves. And Jesus looks at her and says, where are your accusers? Where are those who condemn you? And she said, there's not anybody. And he said, neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more. And immediately when he says that, he says, I am the light of the world. And I found that really fascinating. If you get a chance, go back on my Facebook and watch that message because it was very powerful. Very powerful because it talks about how we see and seeing with Jesus through Jesus' eyes, through Jesus' lens. But the second time Jesus says, I am the light of the world, is in the next chapter. And it's in John chapter 9. And this one's interesting too because Jesus had just been teaching in the temple. He had come out of the temple and there's a guy. And it says it here in verses like 1, 2, 3. There's a guy who's born blind. And the disciples say to Jesus, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Which I always say this, and you can laugh with me, but How can the guy sin and then be born blind? Right? I mean, that's the chicken and the egg thing, right? I mean, like, I don't get that. But that was still the question. Maybe Jesus smirked a little bit. I would have been like, it's very interesting. All things are possible with God. But moving along. So he says this. He says in verse 3, it's not important who sinned, but this guy's here so that we can, the works of God may be displayed in him. And I found that interesting. I was just thinking about that because there's a purpose to this. And the purpose is, here's the guy, born blind. Everybody knows him as that blind beggar. And he sits probably outside of the temple, begging, 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 day after day. That's his identity. That's his name, blind beggar dude, BBD. Hey, how's it going, BBD? Everything's good. You got a couple coins. Shekels would be awesome. Let's have some paper today and not just like the little coins. So, you know, here's the dude. And Jesus sees him. And his infirmity, his sickness, his illness, the purpose of it is so that God can be glorified. And I don't think that we often like to think about that, because all of us here in the room, y'all watching online, we all have weaknesses, shortfalls, deficiencies, inadequacies. And most of us, we're not real eager to kind of put those front and center, right? I was talking with somebody the other day, and they were talking about meeting a new person. And they said the new person was like, you know, super put together. I mean, like, nails, hair, makeup, clothing, iron, precise, precision. And you know, the person my friend I was talking with, she's like, I really wanted to get to know the person, but, you know, they had all this Kevlar, all this protective, like, image. And I think sometimes if we're not careful, we try to protect and hide ourselves in our activities, in our achievements, in the way we dress, because we don't want to let our weaknesses be obvious. But family, the truth of it is, a lot of times, and I've seen this I saw this in Paul, when Paul talked about the thorn in the flesh. When our weaknesses, when we're vulnerable and we're saying, you know, I messed up. I'm not good at this. This is an area I'm struggling. I was talking with Pastor Bree at the beginning before we started service, because we were talking about something I was upset about. And you know, the deal is, it's the March Madness tournament, which got delayed. It's a problem. It's a problem. It's a problem for me. But I figure if I put it out in the open, some way, somehow, God can work through that. And I want God to be glorified, right? I don't want my weaknesses and my shortfalls to be hidden and obscured. I want God to get glory. I want God to work through and let God be seen, whether I'm insecure, whether I'm not like super organized, or I forget schedule stuff and the detail, you know, all that stuff. But if I put it in the light, Jesus can work and move and do phenomenal things, do miraculous things, and work even through my weakness for God to be glorified. So whatever shortfalls you may have, I challenge you, let's not, like, you know, dismiss them, ignore them, and work on stuff. I'm not saying it gives you an excuse not to work on stuff. Of course, work on stuff. But let's make sure that we keep them in the light, because Jesus is the light of the world. And in the light, Jesus can be glorified. And so as you continue on here, I want to show you what happens here, because Jesus says in verse 4, we must work the works of him, we. Notice he says we. He doesn't say I. He's talking to his disciples. That must be you and me. We can be included in the we. So point to yourself and say, that's me. Now, online, you could say the same thing. That's me. We, as in Jesus and me, Jesus, you, me, we, must work the works of him who sent me as long as it's day. Night is coming when no one can work. Then verse 5, while I am in the world, I am the light of the world. When he said this, he spat on the ground, made clay from the spittle, applied the clay to the guy's eyes, and then said, go wash in the pool of Siloam. So I really like this, because I find it very interesting. And what I did here on your notes is I paralleled this. I did it like a compare and contrast. So we're going to say on the right side over here is the woman caught in adultery, because Jesus was the light of the world with her. But we're also going to parallel it and look at the guy who was born blind. Because in both scenarios, Jesus is the light of the world. Now, if you're the guy, I'm just going to tell you this. If you're the guy and you're born blind, you're the blind beggar dude, BBD, you know, and here's this guy, you don't know who he is, but all of a sudden you hear this, and then you feel like a couple seconds later something warm on your eyes. You're going to think, that's gross, right? What just happened? He did the loogie thing, and now I've got it in my eyes. This is worse than being blind. Disgusting. But nevertheless, my point in all this, you're like, that was a bad rabbit trail. That's true. But here's what I want you to think about. I want you to compare and contrast a little bit. Here's a woman, and I want you to catch some of these contrasts here. Here's a woman. Was she born into adultery? She was not. It's a contrast. She's not born. It's an occasion. It's a situation. It's an event. And I'm saying this because this guy over here, he was born blind. It was a state of being for him. And I say that because Jesus is the light of the world for both the occasion, the event, as well as the existence. Whatever your permanent impairment, Jesus is the light of the world. And for all of us who have screwed up, the whole room, everybody watching, Jesus is the light of the world. Both scenarios. But I also want you to keep going with me. Notice here that this was there's an action and an activity. She did the wrong thing. It was his existence. But as you keep going down, notice this. On this side, the woman, she's caught in adultery, and she's exposed. She's brought to the light, so to speak, by the religious leaders. But this guy over here, if you notice what happens with him, he's seen every day. Every single day. No hiding. It's who he is. I'm blind. Can't help it. It's what it is. She was brought out of the light and exposed and shamed. And he was like, look, there's no shame to this. It's just who I am. It's my existence. And I bring these points to you because I think I want us to be aware that in both scenarios, because I think both individuals are relevant to all of us. All of us. Because there's all of us in the room, we have deficiencies. We have inabilities. We have weaknesses. We have things that we're just not good at. And that's how it is. They're impairments. All of us in the room have done something wrong, but Jesus is the light of the world for all of us. And no matter where you find yourself, and if you might find yourself, man, I screwed up again. Jesus is the light of the world. Then you may find yourself frustrated with your ongoing deficiency. How many times do I double book myself and I'm like, oh my gosh, I did it again. I forgot to check the calendar. Stink. And then I text somebody, I'm like, hey, guess what? The hand's laughing because it's like a state of being. And I get so mad at myself. I'm like, come on, get with it. This, you can't blame the concussion. That was how many years ago? It's over. You have to find a new excuse. You don't have jet lag. I mean, it's just what it is. You know, and that's some of my impairment. But I want you to catch that both of them, Jesus is the light of the world. For the woman caught in adultery, this happened, all this expose was in the temple. In church, right? That's important, family. Because there are a lot of people who come to church that don't have it all right, that are messed up. Welcome to church. That's awesome. When you walked in, it was messed up. But this guy, he's outside. And I like that as well, because Jesus is the light of the world, not only in the church, but he's also the light of the world outside. Outside. Everybody that's got maybe coronavirus, maybe everybody that's got fear, maybe somebody's got some kind of congestion and they're nervous, you know, I don't want to get coronavirus, all that stuff. Jesus is the light of the world, both inside as well as outside. Then keep going. They brought, I love this. They brought this woman to Jesus. I don't know that she had a willing... I don't think she was really like super signed up to like, hey, bring me to Jesus with willing heart. But on this side, Jesus found the guy. I like it. I like both sides of it. Because whether we bring somebody to Jesus and they're in desperate need and they've done everything wrong, or whether we're outside, we don't even know, but Jesus finds us. Light of the world finds us even in our darkness. Then watch this. Oh, this is really, really good. Over here, Jesus begins to draw in the dirt. And he does it twice. He takes time. He stoops over. And this is the Son of God. This is genuine love, touching dirt. And I just remind you, let me just remind you, that in Genesis chapter 2, God got his hands in the dirt and shaped and formed man. So God is familiar with dirt, right? It doesn't make him uptight. He's not going to get uptight looking and getting his hands dirty and getting involved in your life. You don't want to mess with that God. It's too dirty. Mm-mm. Jesus gets in the dirt. He draws in the dirt. He takes time to settle into the dirt. But on this side, he spits in the dirt. Right? And I love this about Jesus because he's very unconventional. I mean, okay, you're going to draw in the sand, draw in the dirt, and you got to know the religious leaders on this side are like, stop doing that. Pay attention to what's really at hand here. We got to deal with this indiscretion. That's not right. But he's unconventional over here, and obviously he's super unconventional over here, spitting in the dirt, making mud, and putting it on the guy's eyes. But whether he spits in the dirt or whether he writes in the dirt, he still has his hands in the dirt, family. He's still doing the dirty stuff in our lives, still working with us, and still not put off by the dirt. And I love that Jesus says, okay, I'm going to do things in ways that you wouldn't expect. The religious leaders have these expectations about what to do, stone the chick, and how Jesus heals this guy. For a lot of us, we wouldn't say, do that spitting thing again. That's unconventional, right? Do that spit thing, hock-a-loogie, and let's see what happens. I don't see us saying that. Seriously. But I love that Jesus is the light of the world. And the light of the world does things that are not always in your logical, conventional mind. And let's be open to that. When I first brought up the idea of night care, which is what we do with Saving Moses, babies and toddlers of sex workers in developing countries, we take care of them at nighttime while their moms work. When I first brought up that idea, people looked at me like I was a lunatic. What are you smoking? That is the craziest, stupidest, weirdest thing on the planet. And then I was like, well, if we don't do that, those babies are on the bed with mom as she's working. And then you'd see the light, no pun intended, go on. Exactly. It seems a little unconventional, but at the end of the day, it's a phenomenal expression of genuine love. And genuine love doesn't always do what's conventional. Genuine love goes beyond your natural mind, your natural thinking, your expectations, goes far beyond, exceeds what you could ever perceive in your own limited cognitive abilities. Totally goes beyond that. So he draws in the dirt. Notice on this side, with the woman caught in adultery, there's an audience. Jesus is teaching, plus he's got religious leaders. There's an audience. But I appreciate that the light of the world doesn't always need an audience. Because with this guy, there's no audience. It's the BBD who's always there. And everybody kind of bypasses him, blind beggar dude. They bypass him because he's always, you know, just the common, everyday, that's that guy, you know, throw a couple shekels and move on down the road. He doesn't have an audience. And I appreciate that Jesus, the light of the world, can be light with both an audience and without an audience. Jesus doesn't need an audience to do light and to do genuine love. And I bet you if he had his way with a woman caught in adultery, I don't know that he would have exposed and lit her up and been such a public display. But I love that his genuine love diffused all the condemnation, the accusation, and said, I don't condemn you. Go and sin no more. You're okay. So he has an audience, he doesn't have an audience. As you keep going, notice that here I pointed out that there's religious revelation. You know, he's supposed to stone the lady. And over here, And it's religiously relevant, because, I mean, they're really kind of making this a high-octane, super-intense moment. Everything's culminating for her to get killed. But over here, this guy's irrelevant. He's a blip on the... I mean, he's just... Nobody notices him. She gets all the visibility and has massive religious overtones to it. He has no religious overtones. And the light of the world doesn't need the religious stuff to continue being the light of the world. As you keep going down, the purpose over here was to expose her, to distort her, and really, ultimately, to kill her. And what does the thief come to do? Steal, kill, and destroy. What does the enemy do? The enemy is the accuser of the brethren. The enemy deceives, and the enemy condemns. That's all the territory, and those are all the things that the religious leaders were doing. Eek. They're trying to expose her. They're trying to kill her, and they're on the devil's agenda. But over here, the purpose is to reveal God's work. And I like that the light of the world doesn't allow Satan to get his way. And the light of the world comes over here with the blind guy, and this no-name BBD, and really lights him up and says, hey, I want to let your life be a display, magnify, to absolutely advertise the power of Jesus, the power of the light of the world. And so when you watch the purposes, to destroy and to magnify Jesus, to magnify God, but the light of the world gets his way no matter what. And over here, this is what happens. Jesus saved her future. The light of the world saved her future. That's what light does. Light preserves what's happening into the future. Wherever there's twilight, wherever there's dim, wherever things are gray, where there's obscurity, then the future gets called into question. But over here, not only that Jesus protects and saves her future, but over here with this guy, he heals his vision. He gives him light. For the first time in his whole life, he has light in his eyes, and his eyes see. You know that you have to have light for your eyes to see. You ever been in a dark room that's so dark you can't see the hand in front of you? How does that make you feel? A little jittery, right? Think about it. You're like, I don't want to step anywhere. You kind of freeze in the moment. But the light of the world comes, speaks to this guy, does something super unconventional, and tells him, go wash in the pool of Siloam. Here's a blind guy, makes it worse with mud on his eyes, and then tells him, take a walk. Like, how does that play out? But he does it. But he heals him, and he sees for the first time, the very first time in his entire life, his cornea, his iris, and the other, what are those other things that we have in there? Retina, rods and cones, and your nerve thing, optical nerve. I know, it's like we're playing games here. It's super fun for me and you, I'm sure. But all that stuff starts to work for the first time in his life. And his eyes see. And he's like, and he saves her future, but he heals his eyes. He gives him vision. And I want to say this, when the light of the world, when we receive Jesus as fully the light of the world, family, I think that's the only time we really see accurately. I think a lot of times when we see through our own eyes, through our own thoughts, our own perceptions, our own filters, and we also say nothing of our upbringing, because some of us have things that happen to us from our upbringing that have shaped our perception. True? Oh my gosh, totally true. Totally true. But I'm telling you, family, when we ask Jesus, be the light of my light in my eyes, be the light of my life, we begin to see, understand, and perceive through the eyes of genuine love. And if we don't see through the eyes of genuine love, then stuff gets shady. Stuff gets opaque, gets obscure. It's twilight. It's not accurate. And I love that Jesus saw this woman with eyes of love, and he saw this man through eyes of love. He saw who he made them to be. And that's how Jesus sees you. Jesus sees you, who he has made you to be. And he's aware of your shortfalls. He's aware of deficiencies, all that stuff. But he's the light of the world. And he sees, and he gets in the dirt, and he can make stuff come together. He can do healing. He can do restoration. He can completely redeem because he's the light of the world. And when we let Jesus, and we look through those eyes of love, we begin to see ourselves accurately for the first time, many of us, and we see other people accurately. We don't see him as that jerk who cut us off in driving or whatever. And we say, well, maybe. But, I mean, we see people more accurately. We see them for not, we see beyond their deficiencies. We see beyond the facade. We see beyond the Kevlar put together, beautiful nails, hair, skin, makeup, all. We see past that, and we see them how Jesus sees them, fearfully, wonderfully made, with genuine love pouring out of our hearts to help connect with them. That's what Jesus sees when he sees us. And he wants to see through us and let us be. That's the very bottom part of it. Let us be the light of the world. We're going to get to that. I jumped ahead because I got excited. So here's what he says to this woman after the whole fiasco blows up and everybody leaves. He says to her, go and sin no more. And she leaves and she walks away with hope and a future. But to this guy, and I want you to catch this, because the guy goes, washes in the pool of Siloam, and he comes back seeing. And everybody's freaked out. They're like, aren't you the BBD? I was the BBD, but now I'm not the BBD anymore. Blind beggar dude. I'm like that real guy who was sitting there. And what happens here, I want you to catch this, from verses 13, well, even earlier than that, when everybody saw him and said, hey, aren't you that guy? And the guy said, I am that guy, but somebody told me to go wash at the pool. I went and washed, verse 11, and then I came back and received my sight. And they said, well, where's the guy who did the eye thing, the mud in your eye? So verse 13, from verses 13, and I want you to flip over all the way down to verse 34, 13 to 34, 20 verses, 20 verses. The religious leaders grill him. They put him through the paces. They're like, you know, you can't really be that guy. Maybe you weren't really born blind. So they call in his parents. Hey, is this your son? It is our son. Was he born blind? He was. Well, how does he see now? I don't know. He's an adult. He can speak for himself. That's the parents. The parents don't even step into it. So what happens is this lady, she gets accused and exposed, and Jesus releases her. In the same way, the light of the world, when the light of the world comes into your life and begins to do things, begins to redeem you, to set you free, begins to heal you, don't expect that everybody's going to be whippy skippy about that. Because this guy, and I don't think, I mean, he's like, you know, can't you just be happy with me? I'm seeing for the first time in my whole life, and you guys have to be total jerks. What is your deal? And family, when somebody receives Jesus and the light of the world comes into their life, can we be happy with them? Can we celebrate? Well, I knew you when, and you weren't that, da, da, da. I know, but Jesus has come into my life. He's brought genuine love. He's illuminated my eyes. I can see clearly now. The rain is gone. It's going to be a bright, sunshiny day. Oh, my gosh. Seriously. Can we celebrate? Because the religious leaders didn't. They were very, very prickly and very, very crude and rude. But I like what happened. So Jesus releases her. But then in verse 35... After this poor guy got grilled for just being healed, like he's like the victim of a healing, that how that works, I don't know. But I like this. Jesus releases her, but Jesus finds him. After this whole fiasco, and he's like, I don't know, but I can still see, and that's how this rolls out. Jesus finds him. And I like that Jesus isn't just about the miracle, but more important to Jesus is the relationship. He seeks him out. And Jesus can absolutely do miracles, indisputable, no doubt about it. But more important to Jesus isn't just the miracle, it's the relationship, the connection, and the intimacy that is possible. And Jesus finds him after that whole fiasco, and he says to them, finding him in verse 35, do you believe in the Son of Man? Verse 36. And the former blind guy says, "Who is he that I may believe in him?" Jesus said, "You have seen him, and he's the one talking with you." And so he said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. So what happens here is this lady gets released, and this guy gets reconciled. Both of them. Both of them get their life. Both of them get their vision. Both of them get hope in a future. And then watch this. Over here, she experiences forgiveness, no more condemnation. Over here, this guy experiences God's power. And finally, the religious leaders leave one by one over here and leave her alone. Over here, I think this is sad. His family abandons him. And maybe that's part of the glory of Jesus finding him. It's like, I know what happened with your dad and your mom. I know what went down. I know they kind of hung you out to dry. But I'm here, and I'm here to connect with you. I'm here to integrate and be a part of your life and help you know that you have a future and good things. Not only do you have physical vision, but now I'm here with you literally as a light of the world. So I see both of these scenarios, and I love that Jesus is the light of the world. The light of the world for all of us, whether it's an event, a situation, or whether it's a weakness, something that we don't have. Jesus is the light of the world. So what I'd like to ask you to do is a couple of takeaways here. Number one is see through Jesus' light or lens. See through Jesus' lens. You know, this is exciting. Not really. I'm having to wear readers now. I'm not happy about that. But the readers help me. And I'll go to a restaurant and I have a menu. And I'm like, I'll ask the person across from me, "Hey, can you hold the menu on the other side and like put it way out there? Because I'm having a hard time, especially if I forget my readers." But I really want to encourage you that when we look at life, that we look through the eyes of genuine love. When we look at people around us. And I sit on point number two, to see ourselves as Jesus sees ourselves. I think so many times the accuser has whispered in our ears, has tainted, has distorted, has tried to condemn, has accused. It's just done all kinds of horrible things. But family, when we let Jesus be the light of our life, we see through love around us, but we also see ourselves through the lens of love. It's okay. Jesus loves me. Jesus cares about me. Jesus has a great hope and a future for me. Jesus, and what I love about this is Jesus, this is something important to think about. Do you know that you can love, but not be close? But you cannot be close without love. And it is Jesus' goal to not only love you, but to be close with you. And fully aware of all of your whatever, all of your past, all of blah, 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 Jesus' desire is not only to love you, but to be close with you. And so saying yes to Jesus' love, yes to genuine love, seeing life through love, it changes our priorities. It changes our conversations. It changes some of our paradigm, the way we think, our point of view, our opinion. And I had a friend say this to me the other day, and it's a little bit of a rabbit trail, but I still think it's important. He said that Holy Spirit talked with him and said, "You know what? When you're judging, you're not loving." And that has rung in his mind, echoed multiple times. And I think that's so true, demonstrated here with the woman caught in adultery, but also with the man, the religious leaders who accused him and said, "You know, who do you think you are? You're a sin, man born in sin. You have no clue." And there's not love in that. There's not love. So when we're judging, maybe it's a wake-up call, kind of a divine intervention. Hey, wait a second. If I'm judging, I'm not loving. And there is a difference. We had a conversation in Sunday school this last weekend, the difference between judging and discerning. Doesn't mean you turn off discernment, but judgment, Jesus talks about that really explicitly, and says it's not healthy, it's not constructive. And I say that when we have the light of the world living in us, then we see accurately, we see through genuine love. The last thing I'd ask you to do is in Matthew 5, verses 14 through 16. Because these verses, and this is the whole light of the world thing. Jesus says it twice, I'm the light of the world. But then in Matthew 5, in the Sermon on the Mount, verses 14 through 16, Jesus says this, you are the light of the world. If I'm a follower of Jesus, the light of the world lives in me, and I'm to be the light of the world. I'm to bring light and hope. We live in a community, a culture right now, in this day and age, these weeks, people are freaked out. A lot of fear, a lot of darkness, a lot of panic and anxiety and all that stuff. Family, we are the light of the world. And we can let Jesus love through us. Not be stupid, but perfect love casts out fear. So where we have fear, that's an opportunity for love to come in and remove that fear. And let's let Jesus' light flow through us so that when somebody's done something wrong, we're like Jesus. Okay, I'm not condemning. When somebody's infirm or sick or has a weakness, we can pray for them and let love do what love does. So maybe Jesus would heal them. Maybe Jesus would set them free. Maybe Jesus would give them revelation so they can live in the fullness of their divine design. But we're the light of the world. A city, and he says it, a city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket. But on the lampstand, it gives light to all who are in the house. Verse 16, let your light shine before men in such a way they may see your good works and glorify your Father who's in heaven. Jesus is the light of the world. But as followers of Jesus, he calls us to be the light of the world too. So let's commit to that. Let's not facilitate the panic and the fear and the anxiety and the worry and all. Let's commit to being the light of the world. Saying, yep, love overcomes. And yeah, where there's sickness, I'm willing to pray for somebody. Where there's fear, I'm willing to step in. Where there's despondency and hopelessness, I'm willing to just love. I don't know. I don't have to have all the answers, but I know that I can love. And family, that's what the light of the world does, is genuine love working through us as well as in us. So as we finish today, I'd like to just ask you to close your eyes and to bow your heads. Close your eyes, bow your heads. How many of you would say, you know, Sarah, I've been walking, maybe not walking in utter darkness, but you've been walking in some kind of twilight gray, not totally bright. There's been some darkness in your soul. Maybe the light's been turned down and it's just some obscurity. And maybe there's been judgment in your heart. You haven't been seeing clearly. How many of you would say, that's me, Sarah? That's me. I'm not seeing clearly. I've got some distortion, absence of light. I don't have this crystal clear. Just for everybody that raised your hand, just ask you to put your hand on your heart. If you're watching online, totally join us here on this. But I want to pray for each of us with our hands on our hearts. Holy Spirit, I thank you that you're here, hovering in this room, hovering over each person watching online. And I pray that you would help us to walk in the light, even as Jesus is in the light. Where there's darkness, obscurity, distortion in our perception, we invite you to bring in truth and clarity. Bring in light. I pray, Holy Spirit, and I love this, I pray that you would pour the love of the Father into our hearts. Romans 5:5, each person in this room, each person watching online, pour the love of the Father into our hearts. Help us to see ourselves through the eyes of genuine love and to see the world around us through genuine love. I thank you for helping us, liberating us to walk in light and to be light carriers to the world around us. Thank you for helping us and being our light. In Jesus' name, amen.